You are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Tuesday, February 2nd, 2021. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, Joe Biden meets with the Republican goat small on COVID relief caucus as Democrats begin reconciliation to go big. Meanwhile, what has to happen for Democrats to help the American people through a very sticky reconciliation process? And with 6 days until impeachment, more of Trump's plotting revealed. And one more very obvious reason why a bunch of his lawyers quit the team. AOC recounts the chilling experience she had during the Republican storming of the Capitol. Democrats get serious about Marjorie Taylor Greene. Chuck Schumer, Ron Wyden, and Cory Booker announced legislation to legalize cannabis on a federal level. Joe Biden to release Puerto Rican Hurricane Maria aid. And there's a growing consensus to delay the second dose of vaccinations to get more people dose number one. We'll go over the good, the bad, and the ugly of Biden's first couple of weeks. And a federal judge vacates a late Trump-era rule preventing the EPA from using science. All this and more on today's program. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the show. Thanks for joining us today. Of course, with me, as always, Emma Vigeland. Hello, Emma. How are you today?
Hello, Sam. I'm doing well. Snow seems to have kind of tapered off at this point, so I was able to walk to work without insane wind face, you know, when your face gets all dry and red.
No, I'm familiar with wind face, definitely, of course.
Yeah, that's what I call it. It's definitely not called wind face, but that could be the name of my superhero.
18 inches in New York. This is, I think, one of the biggest snowfalls we've had in about 5 years in New York City.
And you say you believe in climate change.
I am surprised we haven't heard more about that right now. I think we probably would have were it not for everything else that is going on. But yes, that has been an ongoing. Every time it snows, climate change isn't real because Republicans, apparently conservatives, are determined to confuse the weather in any given week versus climate. But
Senator Inhofe, there's still time.
Exactly. I imagine there'll be like a 35-minute report on Sean Hannity's program tonight regarding that. All right. Well, let's get right into this. There's a lot of stuff happening right now. I want to start with this clip of Katie Porter. One of the things that happened last night, AOC did about, I don't know, like a 70-minute Instagram video retelling her experience during the storming of the Capitol and also contextualizing it as to why it was so traumatizing, particularly for her, but I think broadly speaking, it was traumatizing for a lot of people. Let's play this clip of Katie Porter. We will play the clip from AOC's video later in the program, but I just want to start with this so you get a sense of this. And, you know, this it is very easy, I think. Well, it shouldn't be. It seems to be too easy. But it's very easy for people to simply write off any of these type of experiences that elected politicians would have, because they perceive them as as people devoid of normal human emotion. And it is definitely true if you run for office or really pursue any type of celebrity or public face, you are essentially signing up for a certain amount of public abuse. I mean, I don't care if you do a show like ours. Obviously, it gets much greater. The higher profile you are, we're not subjected to that same level of it. Maybe like low level, but not necessarily. But there is a limit in which one could expect. There's nobody who signs up for to be a politician who I imagine on some level or another doesn't expect that at one point they're going to get death threats and whatnot. Sometimes that comes with the territory. There's a lot of crazy people out there. And I'm saying that colloquially. But at the very least, you have an expectation that, you know, when I'm in the Congress, there's a reason why there's a bunch of Capitol Police. There's going to be some measure of protection. You know, you got to remember someone like AOC. I think they make $180,000 a year now as a congressperson. It's not like she can afford to have a fleet of security guards like you might with a celebrity.
And you might argue that of members of Congress or any senators, she is at more risk than anybody based on the nature of her and Ilhan Omar, based on the extreme nature of Republican and right-wing attitudes towards them that are based in racism and sexism and intense emotions that I think are even darker than a lot of people give them credit for.
Without a doubt. I mean, AOC, I think, still has higher name recognition amongst conservatives than she does amongst Democrats and liberals. And or for that matter, maybe, I don't know, DSA folks, maybe a higher name recognition, but broadly speaking across the American public. And there's a reason for that. It's not because she is being celebrated on conservative news. She is being derided and degraded and attacked relentlessly. And the idea that anybody would deny that perspective and that experience is pretty shocking to me. I mean, I will talk more about AOC later in the program. But listen to this story by Katie Porter, who apparently AOC at one point barricaded herself with Katie Porter in Katie Porter's office by pushing a couch in front of the door. I mean, this is the nature of what was going on there. And we know that through reporting that Mike Pence seconds away from being caught by some of those people who were saying hang him, that other members of the Senate and the House were seconds away from being caught. There was some of it was just dumb luck. Some of it was a Capitol Police officer sort of leading the attackers away from those areas where he knew there were lawmakers.
Yeah, we saw what they did to cops. Imagine what they would do to a staffer that got somehow in between them and, you know, anyone else.
Without a doubt. And let's be clear, that officer who fired and killed that woman who was jumping through and smashing a door and was trying to jump through that door, if he had not fired on her, and it's an incredibly unfortunate situation, but if he had not fired on her and she jumps through that door, the idea that the rest of those people wouldn't have followed her through that door, I think, is wishful thinking. I mean, this would have been this was very, very close. And it probably, without that shooting, who knows who would have died on the other side of that door. Here is Katie Porter retelling at least part of her experience last night with Lawrence O'Donnell on MSNBC.
Did you know just how deep Congresswoman Ocasio-Cortez's fears were at that time?
Well, at first she saw me, and we waved. I went into my office, and a couple seconds later, she knocked, and she said, you know, could we come in? And I said, of course. And she began to, you know, her staffer was trying to describe what had happened. And Alex is really usually like unfailingly polite and very personable. And she wasn't even really talking to me. She was opening up doors. And I was like, can I help you? Like, what are you looking for? And she said, I'm looking for where I'm going to hide. And the thing that will always stay with me, the two memories that really, you know, especially as a mom, I think were just really powerful for me, was when she said, you know, I was saying, well, don't worry, I'm a mom, I'm calm, I've got everything here we need, we could live for like a month in this office. And she said, I just hope I get to be a mom. I hope I don't die today. And the second thing is she was wearing heels. And I remember her saying to me, I was wearing flats. And I remember her saying to me, I knew I shouldn't have worn heels. How am I going to run? And we went and we found her a pair of sneakers to wear from one of my staffers so that she could run if she needed to literally run for her life.
How long did the fear of losing life hold?
I mean, I find that to be one of the most moving clips about the insurrection that I've seen. That as a woman who wants to one day have children, that would have been one of my first thoughts. And it really humanizes these politicians, especially the ones like Katie Porter and Ocasio-Cortez, who are not there to enrich themselves, who aren't there for the short term to cash in later and go to work for some lobbying firm. They're there, especially Ocasio-Cortez, with immense bravery, putting up, you know, going through the risks that they endure on a daily basis that are often very sexual in nature, coming from the right wing, violently sexual, and racist in terms of Ocasio-Cortez, Ilhan Omar, Islamophobic, enduring that. It's very moving to me. And the trauma should not ever, ever be discounted or underplayed.
Yeah. And people also, I mean, aside from just the sheer terror that existed in that moment, which I think would have affected anyone, you also have to remember that this is within a context where she was getting text messages, watch out, on January 6th. She's gotten obviously years worth of death threats. I mean, it is just the idea that she's been able to maintain her composure about this for a couple of weeks, frankly, is far more than I would expect of myself under similar circumstances. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we will start talking about what's happening with this COVID relief. There's a lot of sort of ins and outs with reconciliation that you should be aware of. People want to know why this is such a complicated process. We will try and work our way through some of those weeds. We'll be right back in just a moment. In the meantime, I'm drinking some of this right now. And we have a new convert to the Liquid IV.
Oh, my God. I am obsessed with it. I'm obsessed with it.
Well, as you know, I think Emma's a fan of their popular hydration mix. Well, for me, it has been, since I first tried it, Liquid IV's Energy Multiplier. It is a game changer. It both hydrates you and it gives you an extra boost we all need. I don't have my green.
I have the box right here. I used it yesterday, not today.
That's not the energy multiplier. Okay. The energy multiplier is the one that's in the envelope on that metal thing on the side there.
Okay.
One stick is like drinking two cups of coffee, and it's an all natural alternative to processed energy drinks for a sustained energy boost throughout the day. For me, I've got some right here in my cup. I don't know where my my big bottle is, but for me, it's basically during the course of the show. I mean, I'll drink a little bit before the show, but for me, it gets me through the show, catapults me all the way till I get home, deal with the kids, and then I'm exhausted. Energy Multiplier is a healthier alternative to traditional energy drinks and coffee. There's no artificial flavors. There's no preservatives. It has matcha and a green energy blend, and it tastes delicious. Like I say, it gives me an energy boost that I usually get from coffee. And liquid IV cellular transport technology delivers an optimal ratio of nutrients for more efficient uptake. It's non-GMO, it's vegan, and free of gluten, dairy, and soy. And plus, the company has donated over 10 million servings globally. Check it out. You can grab your Energy Liquid IV in bulk nationwide at Costco, or you can get 25% off when you go to liquidiv.com. Use the code MajorityRep, not Majority Report, MajorityRep at checkout. That's 25% off anything you order when you use the promo code MajorityRep at liquidiv.com. MajorityRep. Start fueling your adventures today. liquidiv.com, promo code MajorityRep.
And I will say, I know this isn't in the copy, but why I'm a convert is the hydration multiplier is what I use. And I use it, you know, when we're on the show, right? Because I need to stay hydrated. You guys will see me drinking liquids a lot. I just have to medically. And yeah, it's so good. And also I had one too many glasses of wine, and I had liquid IV the next day, and it really helped.
Yes.
So no, I'm a huge fan.
Definitely when I go, that is my go-to.
Yeah.
When I have overindulged. Folks, I'm not going to lie. I have not been shaving as much as I was doing pre-COVID. Now I'm down to like once a week, maybe twice a week. But when I do, I shave with Harry's. Too often, you got to choose between quality and a fair price. Well, Harry's makes it possible for you to get both. Harry's gives you award-winning blades at factory direct prices. And for a limited time, Harry's is offering their starter set plus a free body wash for just $3 at harrys.com/majority. Harry's delivers a close, comfortable shave at a fair price, only $2 per cartridge refill. They have a German factory. It's one of the select few manufacturers in the world that have mastered the technology to create what they call the Gothic Arch. It apparently is the gold standard for razor blade grinding. Stand behind the quality of their blades so much, they give you 100% money back guarantee on harrys.com. Folks, I've talked about Harry's for years now. They've been supportive of this program for years, 4 years, 5 years. I don't know. For me, they got the smaller blade head, which I love. It's inexpensive, relatively speaking, for razors. They send it to your house. I like the handle, which is sort of a classic as opposed to like, you know, some type of Rambo thing to make you feel like you're, I don't need to feel like I'm going, I don't know, like on some type of special ops mission to shave. I just like it. I like a good shave.
Like it has bullets in the
well,
the
honestly, base. They put it in those plastic containers that it's like.
Oh, God. Yeah.
Anyways, for a limited time, Harry's has an exclusive offer for listeners of my show. New customers get a Harry's starter set and a free body wash, which I actually use as well and enjoy for just $3 at harrys.com/majority. I mean, to the extent that you can enjoy a body wash. That's over a $16 value for just $3. You get a 5-blade razor, you get the weighted handle, you get the foaming shaving gel, travel cover, travel size body wash. It's an incredibly great deal, but act fast while supplies last. Go to harrys.com/majority to redeem your offer. And lastly, day by day, I am learning making small changes can enhance the quality of your life. I am now like consistently making my bed. It's just like one thing, and it sort of sets the tone for the day. The other thing that I have found, my socks are better.
Nice.
Yes, it's the features. When I told Brendan we were doing a features ad, I don't know how many months ago this was. He's like, I love those socks, and I'm like, what? You love a pair of socks? But it makes sense to me now. Changing your socks can make a huge difference in your daily walks, or I don't know if you're playing golf or whatever you're doing. Runners apparently have made features their sock of choice. That's where Brendan gets in on this. Now you can get the same benefits, specially tailored for the golf course or however you use your socks. Features Elite Golf Socks keeps your feet cool, dry, and blister-free while providing a custom-like fit that won't bunch or slip during your backswing. They have targeted compression. It hugs the arch of your foot, and it keeps the sock in place. Look, the value of these socks to me, I don't play golf. I walk. I walk all the time. And at first, I was like, what? There's a left and a right sock? And it makes a big difference. You can feel it. It's strange, but you can feel it. They have an anatomical design. It conforms, like I said, to left and right shape of your feet, creates an enhanced custom-like fit that reduces discomfort and prevents blisters. Features helps enhance your game, whatever you're doing, so you can play harder, faster, or stronger. And here's the best part. If you're unsatisfied at any point, you get a replacement pair. No questions asked. They have a bunch of different types of features on their site. I can't remember the name of the different ones I've gotten, to be honest with you, but I've tried them all out, and I'm almost now full features. That's the other thing I'm doing, is I'm not keeping crappy socks anymore. They get holes. I used to get all my socks at like those street fairs, you know, where you get like 12 pairs for like $5. That doesn't make sense to me anymore.
Why? What do you live in? 1800s at a circus?
That's just the way I did. I did my underwear that way.
You're a circus ringleader?
Well, I'm not doing that anymore. I'm getting quality stuff, and I'm keeping them, and I'm enjoying them every day. Features socks will change how you feel about your socks forever. For listeners of the Majority Report, you can get $10 off your first pair of features when you go to features.com/majority. That's features, F-E-E-T, like feet, features, U-R-E-S.com/majority for $10 off your first pair of features. Check it out, folks. You will not be disappointed with those socks. Okay, so let's talk about Joe Biden yesterday. Met with a caucus, if you will, of 10 Republican senators. They were going to pitch Joe Biden on a significantly smaller COVID relief bill for the American public. The number 10 is important here because last week or the weeks prior, we saw a gang of 16. Which included 8 Republicans and 8 Democrats. The problem with that calculation is 8 Republicans are no more valuable to the Democrats in terms of passing anything than is 1 Republican or, frankly, no Republicans. You need 10 Republicans to come in. And so the Republicans showed up with 10. But to get those 10, they basically need to deny the American public the relief that they need. Here is Jen Psaki. She is the spokeswoman for the Biden administration in the White House press room discussing the meeting between Biden and the Republican Go Small caucus.
It's an exchange of ideas, an opportunity to do that. This group obviously sent a letter with some outlines, some top lines of their concerns and their priorities, and he's happy to have a conversation with them. What this meeting is not is a forum for the president to make or accept an offer. So I think that's important to convey to all of you. And his view, it remains what was stated in the statement last night, but also what he said on Friday, which is that the risk is not that it is too big, this package. The risk is that it is too small. And that remains his view, and it's one he'll certainly express today.
Cautious now, optimism. That's my takeaway from these first few weeks of the Biden, or less than 2 weeks of the Biden administration.
Right. I think that is a definitely the theme, 12 days in. And what Psaki is doing there is she's doing two things. Really, actually, three things. One is she is making it clear that the Biden administration is doing their best to hear the Republicans out and is at least open to the idea of a reasonable compromise. Two, she's also making sure that expectations of these meetings are correct, which is that if Biden doesn't make a deal with them, he is in no way changing up his perspective on this. This is a meeting to hear them out, to show them respect, to tell them that they are part of the process if they want to be part of it. But here's the bottom line is the polling is very, very clear on this. Over 60%, I think it's 67%, according to Vox and data for progress, 64% would back more coronavirus relief, even if it means doing it through budget reconciliation. So Joe Biden, and I'll tell you the third thing that I think is happening, and if you're like me and you listen to the radio in the morning or whenever you can, you hear those like little briefs. Sometimes they do them by the AP. Sometimes they do them by different networks, whatever it is. The way this is being articulated is the Republicans want to provide less relief for the American public. It is very rare where you have such a stark and really, frankly, obvious conflict, which is the Democrats want to give Americans more money to deal with this coronavirus, which I think the vast majority of Americans are looking around. They're looking at record unemployment. CBO just came out today saying that we're not going to get to pre-COVID levels of unemployment probably in this decade. They're looking at businesses that are going out of business. They're looking at people who have lost their health care. They are looking at kids who can't go to school. They're looking at a botched vaccination rollout, frankly, a botched dealing with this pandemic. And they're crying out for relief. And the bottom line elevator pitch story that is now out there that is enhanced by Joe Biden inviting these people to that White House is that Republicans are coming to argue for less help for the American public and Democrats are arguing for more help for the American public. That's a good top line for the vast majority of Americans who don't pay attention to politics like anybody watching this show.
Yeah, exactly. And I think we talk a lot about how the Biden administration seems to have learned from constantly caving to Republicans during the Obama years and how that slowed the economic recovery significantly from the Great Recession. But the media seems to have learned a tiny bit too. And yes, there still is a lot of, we talked about other cable coverage yesterday, compromise for compromise's sake, which is embedded in the questions that they're asking of these politicians. Like, why can't you compromise? Why can't you be bipartisan? But there is less of that. And I think the gravity of this pandemic, the economic fallout paired with the death rate and the just constant weight and baggage that people are feeling of the situation, I think that's even affected the media too. And also they are holding the Republicans accountable a little bit more after Trump, because the honeymoon period's over for them and this Republican Party, at least for the next few months. And they're, like, we should just quickly talk about the substance of this $600 billion package proposed by these Republicans.
I want to get into that for a second. Here is an ad that's put out by Organize for Justice. I mean, remember now, we have two things that have been going on. One, Kamala Harris was sent to Arizona and to West Virginia to give, interviews locally, which is going to make everybody in those states who watch the news going to see that.
But an aggressive approach by the Biden camp. And
to
that's,
basically
yeah.
strengthen the spine, as it were, or the resolve, or however you want to define this, of the possible Democratic defectors. Here's Color of Change going after some of those Republicans to make it clear where the parties are on this. And the other thing, it's not just that the media has learned here. The Trump era ripped the very thin veneer and then off of the Republican deficit hawkery. The idea that we could go, we could overspend to overcorrect a financial crisis. Nobody can actually articulate that anymore with a straight face unless they are literally just, completely shameless in parroting a partisan line. I mean, nobody can say this with a straight face anymore. And that is helping the Democrats. Here is that ad.
After all we've been through, the majority of Americans are united in support of a COVID relief bill that delivers aid to those struggling in this pandemic. But corporate-backed politicians like Susan Collins, Mitt Romney, and Joe Manchin are pushing President Biden to weaken his relief bill. What do these so-called moderates have in common? Three millionaires who think hardworking Americans don't need major support during these difficult times. Tell President Biden, don't give in. Fight for a bill that delivers real relief for working families.
This is also different from the Obama administration. The idea that we are 2 weeks into this administration and we're already seeing outside expenditure groups pressure Biden and go after wayward Democrats. I mean, just having and I think the White House gets it. I mean, that's watching Kamala Harris being deployed there makes a real difference. Now, here is West Virginia Governor Jim Justice, and hard to know whether this wasn't a function of Kamala Harris coming into his backyard and also making it clear we need to go big. But here's Jim Justice, and this is going to help when it comes to Joe Manchin as well.
Economic relief is critical for Americans right now. It's critical to your folks in West Virginia. You've been clear about your desire to support President Biden, to work across the aisle. When it comes to this COVID relief bill, I wonder what is more important to the people of West Virginia and to you, that Biden's $1.9 trillion bill passes, even if it's without Republican support and through reconciliation, which would mean bigger checks to your folks in need, or that it's a bipartisan agreement, even if it's less money?
Well, first and foremost, I wish we'd all come together. And that's just not blowing smoke. I mean, that's just because I don't do that. But the other flip side of it is this, is Poppy, we've got a lot of people in West Virginia that are still struggling with paying their power bill because they got laid off because this pandemic just swept their job away from them.
Right, you know, so which one is it?
I mean, at the end of the day, really and truly, Poppy, what we need to do is we need to understand that trying to be, per se, fiscally responsible at this point in time with what we've got going on in this country, if we actually throw away some money right now, so what? We have really got to move and get people taken care of and get people back on balance.
Hell yeah.
And I want to work with the Biden administration just like I worked with the Trump administration, and mm-hmm. I want us to move forward.
That's really significant to hear from a Republican like yourself in a state where your Democratic Senator Joe Manchin thinks these payments are not targeted enough. Have you talked to him about it?
Well, I have not talked directly to Joe about that and everything. I don't really know exactly what the thinking could possibly be there. I mean, we got people that are really hurting. I mean, that's just all there is to it. And on top of that, you know, I mean, here's a perfect example, Poppy. My executive assistant came in the other day and said, not far from my home, there was an elderly man that froze to death in his house and everything. Probably couldn't afford to pay the power bill. You know, I mean, there are so many different things where people are really, really hurting. Okay. And today we've got to move. We wow. can't hold back. We've got to move.
What was amazing was Poppy Harlow's, is that her last name?
Yes.
Look on her face when he said, I don't care about if we waste a little bit of money, we need to go big. And she just realized like that. That is incredibly compelling. I mean, that should be, in every ad. That is what's going to drive this process forward. Now, with that said, there's some difficulty here that is not just a function of will. There are multiple ways to address this. But one of the problems with reconciliation is a law that was passed in 2010, because part is the sequestration. And frankly, this is what people, when people criticize the Obama administration, it is over their turn to austerity in 2010. It was their fear and their indulging of the Republican lie of deficit hawkery. And we still have people like Nancy Pelosi, who is a big acolyte of Pete Peterson, who was the former Nixon Commerce Secretary, who spent billions, well, was a billionaire, who spent hundreds of millions of dollars in creating a Pete Peterson Foundation that essentially promoted austerity politics. And so this isn't just a Republican conservative theme. There are Democrats who have embraced this, and certainly a lot of those financial types in the Obama administration, they embraced this austerity. And it was a huge mistake. It was a mistake both at a policy level. We had such an anemic and slow recovery, and on a political level, which is why by the time Obama left office, we had lost 1,000 seats across the country to Republicans, and including the House and the Senate. And so the administration seems to have learned, to a certain extent, the Democrats, more broadly speaking, Chuck Schumer echoed this yesterday, seems to have learned this lesson. He specifically said, we're not going to make the mistake we made in 2009. Now, one of the problems you have is like, okay, how do you do this with a filibuster in place in the Senate? We know that Joe Manchin and Kristen Sinema have at this point said they won't vote to get rid of the filibuster. Remains to be seen if there is any other mechanisms that can go forward. We will see if that happens. But the reconciliation process requires essentially no addition to the deficit over a 10-year horizon. Now, what does that mean in practice? We just had a bill that cut $2 trillion worth of taxes about 3 years ago, passed by the Republicans through reconciliation. That bill would have automatically cut Medicare because of this 2010 law to the tune of tens of billions of dollars. It would have also cut other domestic spending programs, billions of dollars. However, to avoid that, Democrats joined Republicans in voting and passing the 60 vote threshold to provide a waiver. Now, there's some question as to whether conservatives and Republicans in this era would do that in this instance. Highly unlikely. So the question becomes, how do you get around that? There's a bunch of different ways that people are suggesting as to how you do this.
And can I add, Sam, there is political value in making Republicans own the fact that they might be trying to cut Medicare, cut Medicaid, cut Social Security, which, you know, they've gotten very close in the past, but often the political blowback and fears that they haven't fully touched that hot stove yet.
That's right. And now Social Security is statutorily protected. That would not be subject to cuts, but just Medicare.
Yeah.
So this is a 2010 law. It is known as PAYGO. This is a law, not the rule that was in the House that was suspended for the sake of COVID. These automatic cuts can only be, at this point, avoided with 60 Senate votes. However, like I say, Republicans could join Democrats and vote for a waiver, unlikely. Congress could declare the relief bill an emergency measure, which would exempt it from PAYGO. But to do that, you need 60 votes. So that's unlikely to happen. Lawmakers could use future reconciliation bills to offset and balance that out and restore Medicare cuts. However, there's a lot of things that the Biden administration wants to do with the future reconciliation bills. They only get three bites at this apple. We'll talk about that. That's also one of the reasons why you're not seeing the rollback of taxes right now, because this is all about trying to get these bills to be net neutral. And so you could roll back some of those Trump tax cuts and do that now. However, then you lose that cachet of money. It's almost like a salary cap, if you will, in basketball. I knew you would. And they want to reserve that money for when they do big infrastructure spending, because they feel that politically speaking, they have more latitude with COVID relief because it has a sense of urgency and it is at least has a feeling of being much less discretionary. You could also shove the restoration of this Medicare funds into some other must pass bill over the course of the year, like the continuing resolution. Otherwise you get a government shutdown. And that's where you start to hold Republicans accountable.
And you can kick that further down the road towards the midterms when that kind of discussion becomes a lot more relevant and a little bit further removed from COVID, when, you know, a second chance to hold Republicans accountable.
Without a doubt, Medicare is an incredibly popular program. And them voting, if you phrase it in the if you can control the media narrative and make this not about adding to Medicare, but rather preventing cuts from Medicare, that could work. David Dayen on Twitter suggests if you do the checks and the shots, in other words, if you get a smaller bill with 60 votes with these Republicans now, that gets you checks to people and shots to people. And let's say you take $800 billion off the table, $700 billion, right? The Republicans are coming in at $618 billion. They're cutting extended unemployment benefits. They're cutting direct payments. They're cutting child tax credits. They're cutting child care. The only thing that they're maintaining is small business funding for $50 billion. But if you can get, this is one theory, you get the Republicans to sign off on, let's say, $900 billion. When you go into reconciliation, this becomes the value of the $15 minimum wage. Because there are multiple studies out there that show adding, increasing the minimum wage to $15 an hour will add $65 billion a year in payroll and income taxes.
And you can use the Republicans' argument against them, which the whole push behind the Trump tax cuts was that it was going to create so much revenue that they would pay for themselves. Obviously, that was a lie that completely discounted the findings of the bipartisan CBO report. But you can still use that argument rhetorically against them when it comes to the minimum wage, which I guess it's dubious if it would be able to be used in budget reconciliation. But you're saying a lot more confident than I was when I floated it out there like a few weeks ago, I guess.
The idea that it would add this amount of money to the operating budget is a good argument that it could be in reconciliation. But even more important, $65 billion a year over 10 years is $650 billion. Plus, it will also have another effect of diminishing the number of Americans who might need things like food assistance, because it's raising a lot of people out of poverty. And in that case, you have now got room in your salary cap of at least $650 billion to offset any spending you do. Now, there's danger here, because if you do checks and shots in the first round, you might weaken the response of folks like Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema. They might be less interested in passing something in reconciliation. So there's but that also depends on how the CBO scores. There are studies out there. We can't tell if the CBO will score the minimum wage in that way as well. And then the other way of doing this is just get rid of the 60 vote threshold and get rid of the filibuster. So there's a lot of different ways around this, but it is complicated. And at this point, what happened yesterday was that leaders in the Democrats in both the House and the Senate filed a joint budget resolution that essentially kicks off the reconciliation process. The resolution in both houses gives a top line number, and it basically says to each committee, here's the dollar figure that you have that falls within your jurisdiction. You guys work out in your committees how that money is going to be deployed. So $350 billion for state and local governments. There's a committee that will oversee that and figure out how that money is distributed.
Right.
Maybe the education committee will deal with reopening schools. Maybe the health committee will deal with how you deploy vaccination funds, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. This is a process. It's going to take a couple of weeks. That's why we've been hearing this vote probably won't happen until the beginning of March under reconciliation. So right now, this is free time for Biden
to perform bipartisanship, because I mean, he thinks that that's important to him, right? And I just wanted to, because I don't know if we said the raw numbers on the show yet about this $618 billion Republican bill from the moderates compared to the $1.9 trillion bill that would be hopefully passed with 50 Democratic votes through reconciliation, right? So $1,400 payments, an unemployment extension of $400 per week. The Republican bill would only
Until
September. The Republicans would keep it at $300 a week.
Until March.
And then just until March, yes. $350 billion in state and local aid, which would not be in that moderate Republican bill at all. And that's key to helping us avoid the recession lasting longer. School and vaccine money. The vaccine money is basically identical in the Republican bill. And again, also the GOP checks would only be $1,000, and tens of millions of Americans would be cut off because they basically are trying to cut it off at $50,000 of income eligibility as opposed to the $75,000 for the $1,400 in Biden's bill. So this is insane. The gulf is immense. And so as long as Biden's bipartisan performance is just that, a performance, I will have zero issues with him, really, because that's still exceeding my expectations for him and his presidency at this point.
Child tax credit, $120 billion in the Biden plan, zero in the Republicans plan. Rental assistance, $35 billion in the Biden plan, zero in the Republican plan. Child care, $40 billion in the in Biden's plan, 20 in the Republican plan. There's more, but those are the big nutrition, public transport, veterans, and other policy changes, $140 billion in the Biden plan, zero in the Republican plan. There's a lot of this. And the further we can go on and hear about how the Republicans are just not interested for apparently no reason other than just because in providing support for the American public, that's a good thing. All right.
Yeah. And Biden's plan is still not enough. It's still not enough.
It's still not enough.
Yeah.
And it is, it remains to be seen if we're going to get more support as the year goes on in that second reconciliation bill. But I myself go for the get rid of the filibuster. This just in, apparently, Joe Manchin on Harris's interview in West Virginia. Quote, there's no apologies needed. I mean, we're all in this. We understand that it was a mistake. They made a mistake and we understand. We move on. You can't dwell on those things. Good for Joe Manchin. And I think, you know, frankly, when the governor of his state came out and
who's basically the mirror image of him on the Republican side, right? Like he's a Democrat in name only. The Jim Justice is a Republican ish. Like they're both two sides of the same coin, basically right, teetering on the edge of the other's party.
Let's go over a quick review of where we are with Joe Biden, right? The jury's still out about this $1.9 trillion bill. Let's just start off by saying should have been $2,000, not $1,400. Got fast and loose. What's the point of that? You know, what's the difference between a $2.2 trillion bill and a $1.9 trillion bill? There is still this mentality that the American public actually like sort of there's some type of magical threshold that Americans start to pay attention to. Nobody even remembers $3-4 trillion in March. Nobody. And nobody can actually outline how that money was spent. I'm talking about your average American on the street. And so these numbers are not as intimidating to the American public as apparently the politicos seem to think there is. $2,000 was just what was pitched. So you just do that. And look, I don't know what they think the downside of it could possibly be. We had the lowest rate of poverty in years upon years during those like 4 months in the wake of those payments. And what's wrong with that? But
people don't feel like they have to go to work at jobs they don't like.
There's not the economic anxiety that Alan Greenspan so helpfully laid out in some of his Fed testimony almost 20 years ago that is necessary to keep the economy running in their minds. Here is Mehdi Hasan did a rundown on MSNBC.com, which I thought was pretty good, entitled "How I Was Maybe Wrong About Biden." Because look, it's very early. The only thing that we have to compare is the first 10 days of the Obama administration, where they were already talking about cuts to Social Security. They were already talking about, at least doing a head nod to a turn to austerity in the future, and this concern that they could be spending too much on the financial crisis. He has signed more, according to Mehdi, 40 executive orders, including rejoining the Paris climate change, canceling the Keystone XL pipeline, ordering the conservation around 30% of all federal land and water by 2030, and the suspension of new oil and gas leases on federal land and water. There were still some leases that were approved. He established a White House Office of Domestic Climate Policy, made climate change a national security foreign policy priority. Says things like every major economist thinks we should be investing in deficit spending in order to generate economic growth, as opposed to Obama's austerity promotion. On day one of his presidency, Biden ended the Muslim ban, canceled construction of the border wall, included undocumented immigrants in the census count, blocked the deportation of Liberian refugees, issued a memo preserving and fortifying the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program, that's DACA, shielding 650,000 immigrants from deportation, announced a 100-day moratorium on all deportations, attempted to be blocked by a Trump judge, but I don't think that that can really actually function in that way. I think that moratorium is all in place, but for name. Sent a bill to Congress offering a pathway to citizenship for around 11 million undocumented migrants. Officially revoked the Trump's administration's zero tolerance program, which allowed for the kidnapping of children at the border. Now, with that said, there's still, according to our friend Ronald Reagan, the immigration lawyer calls into this program, has a podcast called Deconstructed. There's still a couple of executive orders that Trump issued dealing with visas that are no-brainers to be reversed and have yet to be reversed. And he himself, as a small immigration lawyer, has multiple clients who are stuck in Mexico because of this, who should be getting a green card. So understand that there's a lot of stuff that Joe Biden has done. There's a lot more he could do just within the realm of.
And he's only suspending those contracts on federal lands for gas and drilling. He could cancel a lot of the ones that they rushed in at the end of the Trump era.
Jury's still out on a lot of these things, but it's important that we have a perspective on this, both the good and the bad. Fortunately, nothing ugly quite yet. He rescinded the Trump administration's counterfactual 1776 commission.
And the student debt thing is egregious, that we still have not canceled any student debt. That's an absolute abomination. He could do that with the stroke of a pen, and there's no reason for Biden not to do so.
None whatsoever. Did order the federal contractors feds to have a $15 minimum wage. He ordered the Department of Labor to develop plans to ensure a $15 minimum wage for federal employees, I should say. He asked the department to clarify rules establishing that workers have a federally guaranteed right to refuse employment that will jeopardize their health. So you can't be forced to come in to work and you're still eligible for unemployment insurance. He has asked senators to recruit civil rights attorneys and defense lawyers for judgeships. We talked to Brian Fallon again from Demand Justice. That was something that progressives have been working on, making sure less corporate attorneys getting judgeships. They announced their intention to renew U.S. relations with Palestinian leadership and Palestinian people. However, they have left the embassy in Jerusalem. Problematic, they've appointed the dovish Robert Malley as a special U.S. envoy to Iran. They've also been saying, a bunch of junky things about Iran having to make the first move. We'll see how that plays out. The Director of National Intelligence will release unclassified information on the killing of Jamal Khashoggi. Biden ordered a pause on weapon sales to Saudi Arabia and the UAE. We'll see how long that goes. There's plenty of other things he could be doing. Going past public option, Medicare for all. We've talked about that a lot. The ban on federal private prisons. Mostly ICE and the Department of Homeland Security are using federal prisons, and they're using that for immigrants. That should be banned as well. We mentioned the checks. There are some members of their administration. Today, Tom Vilsack is getting confirmed as Secretary of Agriculture. Horrible pick. That said, progressives are very happy about sort of like the second tier picks that will be staffing a lot of these agencies. So there's a, you know, there is some reason to be optimistic, but there, I think the watchwords, I think you said it best, Emma, cautiously optimistic is the way that we should proceed. And it's good to see people holding the Biden administration to account for even these small things, because as they do these, you know, on some level, Joe Biden, and we've been saying this for since he won the nomination, Joe Biden is my second favorite type of politician. My favorite is one who agrees with the policies that I want. My second favorite is a cipher who is going to do as how they are pushed. And one of the obstacles to pushing Joe Biden is that they're worried if they do progressive things that they're going to pay some type of price. And I think they're starting to see that they can do these things and get away with it. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk about AOC's really harrowing account that she gave last night of the Capitol attack. Okay, we're back. So Emma, AOC was on Instagram last night.
She was. And she was on for, I believe, a live of almost up to 90 minutes describing her experience at the Capitol. And she revealed that she is a survivor of sexual assault and how that informed what happened to her. Because I'll be real, guys, if I were in her position and I was alone or I didn't have security around me and there was a mob of all these people breaking in and she would be the number one or number two target I could think of that they would direct their anger and ire towards, I would think there was a very significant chance that I would either first be killed or I would be raped first. So this is how she describes her experience and some of the trauma that brought up in her.
Bathroom. And I immediately realized that I shouldn't have gone into the bathroom. I should have jumped in the closet. And so I opened the door when all of a sudden I hear that whoever was trying to get inside got into my office. And then I realized that it's too late. That it's too late for me to get into the closet. And so I go back in and I hide back in the bathroom behind the door. And then I just start to hear these yells of, "Where is she? Where is she?" And I just thought to myself, they got inside. And so I hide behind my door like this, like I'm here, and the bathroom door starts going like this, like the bathroom door is behind me, or rather in front of me, and I'm like this, and the door hinges right here, and I just hear, "Where is she? Where is she?" And this was the moment where I thought, everything was over. And the weird thing about moments like these is that you lose all sense of time. In retrospect, maybe it was 4 seconds, maybe it was 5 seconds, maybe it was 10 seconds, maybe it was 1 second. I don't know. It felt like my brain was able to have so many thoughts in that moment, between these screams and these yells of, where is she? Where is she? And so I go down and I thought I was going to die. And I had a lot of thoughts. You have a lot of thoughts, I think, when you're in a situation like that. And one of those thoughts that I had was, I just happened to, be a spiritual person and be raised in that context. And I really just felt like, if this is the plan for me, then people will be able to take it from here. I had a lot of thoughts, but that was the thought that I had about you all. I felt that if this was the journey that my life was taking, that I felt that things were going to be okay. And that, I had fulfilled my purpose. Anyways, sorry guys. So anyways, as I'm hiding in this.
Yeah. So I just thought that was the most powerful part of the live, because obviously, of course, she had fulfilled her purpose. She has. She's done so much good for the progressive movement. And it highlights the toxicity with which she's treated by the right-wing media that inflames them in such ways. She's the latent sexualization of her. I experienced this on a tiny micro scale as someone on the internet. I'm able to identify that in with which the fury she's treated, the just complete rabid foaming at the mouth obsession with her. I mean, you remember all of those memes shared about her graphically on these right wing pages. That is what is so embedded in this. And her talking about her surviving sexual assault and how that informed this experience, it made it so much clearer to me how much more poignant that trauma would be for her. And there's nobody I can think of in this world who would be more of a target of that kind of hurricane of violence. And I really appreciate her bravery and sharing that.
And, this is stuff, frankly, that should be laid out there in the context of impeachment that is coming up. And Republicans are simply not going to take any responsibility for any of this. And we're seeing it with the Marsha Taylor Greene situation. We'll talk more about that later. But the Republicans are simply not taking responsibility for their role in this and for Donald Trump's role in it even. And we're going to see more of this over the next couple of weeks. And it was just incredibly moving, and a reminder that, these lawmakers are human. And particularly when you get into this type of very black and white type of situation as to whether or not we're going to make it out alive. Yeah. That's it for us today. As always, if you missed any part of this program, you can check us out on the Choice channel on the Peacock app. We play at 5 p.m. and 10 p.m. Every day. We will be back with more tomorrow, unless you are still here, in which case we will be back for more still now. I'll have more to say about the AOC thing. And
can I take something on to this? Sure. There's this picture here that Jack had been shared a year or so ago. AOC honors Mariela Franco, murdered by right-wing forces in Brazil last March, with Party of Socialism and Freedom Congresswomen Fernanda Melanchonia, Talaria Petrone, and Samia Bonfim. And I think that's relevant in this context. I think the people that are implying that she's being in any way hysterical are just creeps, and I think it's really gross.
Let's be explicit about when you put that up. Do we have a Greenwald on Jimmy Dore's show? I mean, this is...
And Michael Tracy. I mean, I know we don't take him seriously, but this was so repugnant that... I mean, I tweeted it out last night.
Yeah, that's who I saw. I haven't seen the Greenwald thing yet.
So Michael Tracy tweeted, "Good to know that any loopy delusion expounded by a politician must now be respected and believed," in quotes, "under the aegis of trauma."
Put Tracy's...
I'm sending it, guys.
...tweet up. And I think I put the Greenwald clip in the Slack. Aside from the fact that Greenwald obviously was friends with that assassinated politician in Brazil, and AOC, I don't know if she was the only American politician to recognize her. But just even separate all of that out. And I tweeted this out, but I'll repeat it here. Having witnessed firsthand during the run-up to the war in Iraq and following it, the treatment that Jeanine got in a non-social media universe, which I would imagine exacerbates this tenfold, just from her limited appearances on cable television, arguing against the war, knowing that people were stopping, like that men were getting out of cars in the streets of New York to get into her face and yell at her, threaten her, knowing that there were death threats that were sort of more serious than others. Understanding sort of like that, just that environment and what it does to your mentality is, it is so grotesque that people would sort of deny this experience. Now, we're going to play this clip from Greenwald. This was released, this mocking of AOC, when she was saying, apparently she wasn't saying enough or being explicit enough for Glenn Greenwald's tastes to take what she says at face value. I mean, on some level, like, I don't even know why you.
So this was before, is what you were going to say. This was before her live.
This was before she gave the talk last night. But I mean.
But still, no, I mean, it's outrageous.
We all know what she's experienced. I mean, you have to be completely deluded to not know that she is the enemy number one. You know, they don't talk about Nancy Pelosi, San Francisco politics anymore. They talk about AOC.
Again, I just need to emphasize the undercurrent of sexual violence that is intertwined with the political violent rhetoric that is directed at her makes it even more intense and frightening. It's as dark as anything I've seen in politics in terms of just the way that she is spoken to and treated by people on the right. And to downplay this by somebody like Glenn, who has experienced massive amounts of death threats in his life based on his reporting, seems like an oversight.
Maybe Glenn didn't experience it as much because he had the money to have a full security force. And he mentioned that was one of the difficult things about leaving The Intercept, was that he would lose his security force. I don't know. I'm not making excuses for him. I'm just saying that's maybe his argument. But the idea that you wouldn't be aware of the context that she was working in. And then also, this is part of, like, there's some heavy lifting going on here, too, because you have to deny that this attack on the Capitol was in any way real, even though five people died. As a minimum, there was a couple of cops who took their own lives in the wake of this. Five people died. And to look at that situation and think like, oh, there was no chance for more violence. I don't even know. It's just bizarre. Let's play this clip Okay. The idea that she's centering herself in every drama. I mean,
Glenn's never done that on the internet.
Right. Of course. The dementia on some level that is involved in feeling like you have to go on Jimmy Dore's show to carry this water is, I don't, it's just off the charts bizarre to me.
This week has been like the most amazing week of having the left and the right unite against Wall Street.
Oh, pause it for one second. Let me just also talk about the other sort of incredible thing about this. Glenn is talking about a tweet AOC did sort of, and a lot of people like enjoyed the fact that these hedge funders, took a big loss. But there's nothing structural to be garnered by this. The idea that the casino is democratized, that's all well and good. But the real problem is that we look at this casino that is Wall Street as serving some type of function to society and as some type of measure of the economy. That's the problem. But the idea that she tweeted out something like this and Ted Cruz responded with, "I agree." And you take that at face value?
Well, I just got to add this context, Sam, because no one's talking about this part. And I should have pointed it out on Twitter. Cruz and Ocasio-Cortez had attempted in good faith to work together beforehand. In 2019, I interviewed her and talked about how they were working on legislation together to ban former lawmakers from being lobbyists. Nothing came of that. Then, a year and a half later, Ted Cruz helps incite an insurrection that almost has her murdered. So maybe Cruz wasn't operating in good faith that time, and he certainly isn't now.
I don't know if anybody remembers the 2016 campaign where Ted Cruz looked into that camera and said, "You say that about my wife. I will never forgive you, except for 2 weeks from now when I will totally become your sycophant.
I will phone bank for you, dear leader."
All right. So play this. Listen to the credulity that Glenn Greenwald has for Ted Cruz versus the credulity he gives to AOC.
Unite against Wall Street. Almost everybody across the spectrum supports what those Redditors are doing and is thrilled to see these hedge fund leeches suffering. And it has blown, it's created a major opportunity to regulate, to legislate, to reform. And Ted Cruz, whatever you think of him, reached out by saying, "I agree with AOC about this." So that was an opportunity for right and left to join together to do something that supposedly her main reason for existing as a political figure, which is fighting income inequality. And instead she turns around and says, "Fuck you. I don't want to work with you. You guys got me murdered. You're a white supremacist." And suddenly the two camps divide again. And over here you have the red team and over here you have the blue team cheering like morons at a fucking high school football game again, because she ruined that movement, because all she wants to do is attack Republicans and fortify the Democratic Party. That is what the left has become, and they know it. And that's why all that's left for them to do is do things like talk about your personality and occasionally mine.
It is stunning to see AOC turn into Adam Schiff. It is stunning to me to see her just totally focus all her ire. And it started for me.
Disturbing breaking news. A Texas man who participated in the Capitol riot is now.
I think we don't need that part of it. That I think was just somebody juxtaposing.
Yeah.
But there it is. I mean, talk about cheering fucking morons and being on a team.
They should start a podcast themselves called The Edgy Bipartisans. I think they'll do real good numbers.
Well, that's exactly making this case. Making the case that they deride.
Here's the second clip.
That others deride, yeah.
Here's the second clip from that same show, right?
Only thing she does is like occasionally escalate her rhetoric about Republicans.
Yes.
So like, "Oh, you're fascist, you're Nazis." She like use the words that like that's zero. That's nothing. That's just being an extra Democrat.
That's right. That's right. And
can I just make one more point, Jimmy?
Yes. This is just like demonstrably false.
Yeah.
She came out and chastised Biden about the $2,000 checks. She was on this program talking about how the HEROES Act and the COBRA subsidies were garbage. The idea that she only critiques Republicans is just, it's just demonstrably false. But go ahead.
Use the words that, like, that's zero. That's nothing. That's just being an extra Democrat.
That's right. That's right. And
can I just make one more point, Jimmy? Just make one more point?
No.
Yes, I have to. Yes, shut up, Jimmy. I wasn't really asking. Here's the thing. I do want to say one thing. Like, I do believe that, like, AOC genuinely rattled by what happened at the Capitol. She is the target of right-wing media in a pretty demonizing way. I'm sure it was, like, unsettling to have these mobs running through the Capitol. You have no idea if they're armed, what their intentions are. I'm sure that was scary. She made it through completely unscathed. Not an even tiny little bruise on her body. Every other member of Congress and the Democratic caucus, including Ilhan Omar and Rashida Tlaib and others, are equally demonized. And they're fucking over it. They got over it. If you want to be a member of Congress, you can't constantly center your own, like, lived experiences. You're not there to, like, center yourself in every drama. If you have an opportunity to strike a blow against Wall Street and the massive inequality and suffering that it causes, you don't have the right to refuse.
First off,
she's there to center part of her own lived experiences because she was elected in a district in which there was a white old man who lived in Virginia who wasn't representing his constituents and who was beholden to his donors. Part of why she's there is because she's a lot more representative of her community than the past representative.
The idea, though, that it's like inappropriate for she's like, look, you could come up with a list of three or four people that those people were in there that are on the top of their list. I mean, I can, like, without a doubt, every single person listening to the sound of my voice, including those idiots, know exactly who was on their list. If you were to hold up, like, if you were to interview every single one of those people who barged in there with the zip tie handcuffs, with the weapons, whatever it was, and ask them, who are you looking for? Mike Pence, Nancy Pelosi, AOC. That's how it goes. Everybody in the world who has half a nut of a brain understands that.
Yeah, Ilhan responded to that fatuous BS. Y'all stop invalidating AOC's experiences because you aren't hearing about the experiences of other members. Everyone deals with trauma differently. Her stories are validating for so many of us with similar experiences, and she is showing people that vulnerability is strength. So,
and the idea that
and juxtapose that with
policing, like, yeah. You know, like they got on me with tone policing Jimmy Dore when he is saying F her, she's a effing fraud and blah, blah, blah. They call that tone policing. And give me a break. She foreclosed an opportunity to work with Ted Cruz to get financial reform. Is he out of his effing mind? Honestly, like what, how high on your own supply do you have to be that you actually believe that garbage?
Well, you said it exactly right. This is like, who do you give credence to? Who do you trust more? Who do you give more leeway, more rope when it comes to these situations? And the idea that Ted Cruz is behaving in some sort of honest way. Again, I point to the 2019 attempted collaboration that fell through. It's not like she's opposed to working with Republicans. She did it last year. She did it in 2019, a year and a half ago, the summer of 2019. She tried to work with him on banning former lawmakers from lobbying. What happened? Nothing. Do you think that was from her end? I don't know. Glenn may not know who actually made that fall through, but like, he's certainly giving a lot more leeway to the fascist wannabe Ted Cruz, who is a proven liar at every stretch, than Ocasio-Cortez. And again, it just blows my mind that Glenn, and I have praised him on this show for his reporting, has faced death threats and harassment for his reporting. You would think that someone would be sensitive to that because all of us here on this show were sensitive to that then.
She wasn't beaten up, so it doesn't count. That's the bottom line.
And by the way, like, how do you work in media and how are you that smart and you don't understand misogyny at this point? Jesus Christ.
Well,
like, how that works.
Sometimes your reasoning is motivated by other things.
Yeah.
All right. We got to take a break. Head into the fun half. 646-257-3920 is the number. Just a reminder, this program relies on your support. You can become a member at jointhemajorityreport.com. and you support the free show, and then get the fun half after that. I didn't realize how late. Nomi has been waiting patiently in the.
Are you guys okay?
Yes,
no, we're not. We're not okay.
I tuned. I like watched it, and then I thought, okay, something's going on.
Are you in your microphone? You're a little echoey today. I understand you got Sarah Jaffe.
It's far from her.
Joshua Kahn Russell and Napoleon DeLegend on the program today.
I do. You know my show already. I memorize this stuff
weeks in advance.
Yeah, I think you got the wrong mic hooked up though, Nomi.
Yeah, I have a feeling you're on your computer mic, not your mic.
Yep.
Also, if that's the what do you call it? What's it called? The igloo? What is that
thing? The Yeti.
The Yeti.
No. It says it's on this microphone.
There's four different settings, and some of them are a lot better.
We'll play with it at the break. But why don't you tell us who's on your show? Hold that microphone right up to your mouth. We'll tell you right now if we're getting through
that. I use this microphone on this setting every single day. No,
it's not working.
It's not connected.
It's not coming through that mic.
It's coming through your computer, but. Well, who's going to be on? I just said who's going to be on your show. Where can people watch it?
In the year 2000. You remember that? aging myself right now. We have Sarah Jaffe on the show today with her new book. And then we have Napoleon DeLegend and Joshua Kahn Russell. Find us at Twitch at @_NomiKey_Kahn's as well as patreon.com/TheNomiKey Show and youtube.com/TheNomiKey Show.
No Me Key Show.
You got it.
I got it.
Wait, can I tell a story real quick if this isn't too annoying?
Sure.
Thank you.
Yeah.
When I went to kindergarten, my parents knew I was going to have an issue saying my name. So my dad got t-shirts made up that said how to pronounce my name for the teachers to see. So I think I have to get one for you, Sam.
Oh, that would be good. Very helpful. Like a name tag.
But like somehow it's not going to work because it's not even like you called Liz Cheney Lynn Cheney twice yesterday. I corrected him on air, but it was just too funny. And then you still really don't have Kamala Harris down.
I do have Kamala Harris down.
No, you say Kamala sometimes.
Do I sometimes? All right.
Kamala Harris.
I think we should create a jar and make some money off this every time he makes a mistake.
Make a ton of money. I mean, I mispronounce, like Matt, I'm good with. Emma, that I can do.
Yeah.
With that said, don't forget to check out The Antifada, which I think I can say, twitch.tv/TheAntifada. Check that out. And Matt, what's happening on the Matt Lekian media universe?
People might not have known. There's a new episode of Literary Hangover out, The Secret Diary of William Byrd of Westover. He's a slave owner in early 1700s Virginia who kept a secret diary that he kept in like a secret code, and it got leaked, or part of it got leaked. Some of the juicier ones might have been suppressed. But anyway, we talked through it. Patreon.com/Literary Hangover.
All right, quick break. And we'll be back in just a moment. Left is best. Jamie and I may have a disagreement.
Yeah, you can't just say whatever you want about people just because you're rich.
I have an absolute right to mock them on YouTube.
He's up there buggy whipping like he's the boss.
I am not your employer.
You know, I'm tired of the negativity.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to upset you. You're nervous, you're a little bit upset, you're riled up.
Yeah, maybe you should rethink your defense of that, you fucking idiots.
We're just going to get rid of you.
All right.
But dude. You want to smoke this joint?
Yes.
Do you feel like you are a dinosaur?
Some good shit.
Exactly. I'm happy now.
It's a win-win.
It's a win-win-win.
Oh, hell yeah.
Now listen to me. 2, 3, 4, 5 times. 847-906-501-457. 2, 38, 56, 27. 1/2, 5/8, 3.9 billion.
Wow.
He's the ultimate math nerd.
Don't you see?
Why don't you get a real job instead of spewing vitriol and hatred, you left-wing Limbaugh?
Everybody's taking their dumb juice today.
Come on, Sammy.
Dance.
Ooh.
my first post-coital scene with a woman. I'm hoping to add more moves to my repertoire. All I have is the dip and the swirl.
Fine, we can double dip.
Yes, this is a perfect moment.
No.
Wait, what?
You make under $1 million a year. You're scum. You're nothing.
Excuse me? Fuck you, you fucking liberal elite. I think you belong in jail.
Thank you for saying that, Sam. You're a horrible, despicable person.
All right, gonna take a quick break. I want to take a moment to talk to some of the libertarians out there. Take whatever vehicle you want to drive to the library. What you're talking about is jibber jabber.
Classic. I'm feeling more chill already.
Good.
Donald Trump can kiss all of our asses.
Hey, Sam. Hey, Andy. You guys ready to do some evil?
Hitler was such an idiot.
I think I might be a Nazi.
Agree.
No.
Death to America.
You.
Yes.
Wow.
Wow, that's weird. No way! Unbelievable. This guy's got a really good hook.
Throw our hands up.
Wow.
But Sam, I gotta get off.
No worries. Let's I wanna just flesh this out a little bit. I mean, look, it's a free speech issue. If you don't like me.
Hey, shut up!
Thank you for calling into the Majority Report. Sam will be with you shortly.